Chapter 32. A Portion of Wisdom. The Golden Wheel was a large inn just off the Avharan Market, with a long, beam-ceilinged common room crowded with small square tables. Even at midday, no more than one table in five had anyone sitting at it, though, usually an outland merchant, facing a woman in sober colors with her hair worn on top of her head or gathered up at the nape of her neck. The women were merchants, too, or bankers. In Farmadding, banking and trade were forbidden to men. All the foreigners in the common room were male, since the women among them could be taken into the women's room. The smells of fish and mutton cooking in the kitchens filled the air, and occasionally a shout from one of the tables summoned one of the serving men who waited in a line at the back of the room. Otherwise, the merchants and bankers kept their voices low. The sound of the rain outside was louder.
"Are you certain?" Rand asked, taking the creased drawings back from a lantern-jawed serving man he had drawn off to one side of the room.
"I think it's him," the fellow said uncertainly, wiping his hands on a long apron embroidered with a yellow wagon wheel. "It looks like him. He should be back soon."
His eyes darted beyond Rand, and he sighed.
"You better buy a drink or go. Miss Galger doesn't like us talking when we should be working, and she wouldn't like me talking about her patrons any time."
Rand glanced over his shoulder. A lean woman with a tall ivory comb stuck in the dark bun at the back of her head was standing in the yellow-painted arch that led to the women's room. The way she looked over the common room, half queen surveying her domain, half farmer surveying her fields, and either way displeased with the sparsity of trade she saw, named her the innkeeper. When her gaze fell on Rand and the lantern-jawed fellow, she frowned.
"Mulled wine,"
Rand said, handing the man some coins, coppers for the wine, and a silver mark for his information, uncertain as it was. More than a week had passed since Rand had killed Rachide and Kismet had gotten away, and in all those days this was the first time he had gotten more than a shrug or a shake of the head when he showed the drawings. There were a dozen empty tables right at hand, but he wanted to be in the corner at the front of the room, where he could see who came in without being seen himself, and as he edged his way between the tables, snatches of conversation caught his ear. A tall, pale woman in dark green silk shook her head at a stocky man in a tight-fitting black Tyran coat. An iron-gray bun made her look a little like Cadswain from the side. He appeared to be made of stone blocks, but his dark, square face was worried. "You can put your mind at ease about Andor, Master Admira," she said soothingly. "Believe me, the Andorins will shout and shake swords at one another, but they'll never let it come to actual fighting. It is in your best interests to stay with the present route for your goods. Kyrian would tax you a fifth more than Farmadding. Think of the added expense." The Tyran grimaced as if he were thinking of it, or wondering whether his best interests really coincided with hers.
"I hear the body did be all black and swollen,"
a lean, white-bearded Ilioner in a dark blue coat said at another table.
"I hear the councils did order it burned."
He raised his eyebrows significantly and tapped the side of a pointed nose that gave him the appearance of a weasel.
"If there was plague in the city, Master Azarios, the councils would have announced it,"
the slim woman sitting across from him said calmly. With two elaborate ivory combs in her rolled hair, she was pretty, in a fox-faced way, and cool as an Aes Sedai, though with faint lines at the corners of her brown eyes.
"I really do suggest against moving any of your trade to Lugard. Murindi is most unsettled. The nobles will never stand for Rohedron building an army, and there are Aes Sedai involved, as I'm sure you have heard. The light alone knows what they will do."
The Ilioner shrugged uncomfortably. These days, no one was very certain what Aes Sedai would do, if they ever had been. A Kandori, with gray streaks in his forked beard and a large pearl in his left ear, was leaning toward a stout woman in dark gray silk, who wore her black hair in a tight roll along the top of her head.
"I hear the Dragon Reborn has been crowned King of Ilion, Mistress Shimmel."
A frown put more wrinkles in his forehead.
Given the White Tower's proclamation, I am considering sending my spring wagons to travel along the Aranin to Tyr. The river road may be a harder route, but Ilion is not such a market for furs that I want to take too many risks.
The stout woman smiled, a very thin smile for such a round face.
I'm told the man has hardly been seen in Ilion since he took the crown, Master Posavina. In any case, the tower will deal with him, if it hasn't already. And this morning I received word that the Stone of Tyr is under siege. That is hardly a situation where you will find much market for furs now, is it? No. Tyr is not a place to avoid risks.
The wrinkles in Master Posavina's forehead deepened. Reaching a small table in the corner, Rand tossed his cloak over the back of the chair and sat with his back to the wall, turning up his collar. The lantern-jawed fellow brought a steaming pewter cup of spiced wine, murmured a hurried thanks for the silver, and scurried off at a shout from another table. Two large fireplaces on either side of the room took the chill off the air, but if anyone noticed that Rand kept his gloves on, no one glanced at him twice. He pretended to stare into the wine cup between his hands on the table while keeping an eye on the door to the street. Most of what he had overheard did not interest him greatly. He had heard as much before and sometimes knew more than the people he eavesdropped on. Elaine agreed with the pale woman, for example, and she had to know Andor better than any farm-adding merchant. The stone under siege was new, though. Still, he need not trouble himself with it yet. The stone had never fallen, except to him, and he knew Alana was somewhere in Tyr. He had felt her leap from just north of Farmatting to somewhere much farther north, then a day later to somewhere far to the south and east. She was distant enough that he could not say whether she was in Haddon Merc or the city of Tyr itself, yet he was confident she was one place or the other, with four other sisters he could trust. If Marana and Rafella could get what he wanted from the sea folk, they could from the Tyrans, too. Rafella was Tyran, and that should help. No, the world could get along without him a little longer. It had to. A tall man swathed in a long, damp cloak, with the hood hiding his face, came in from the street, and Rand's eyes followed him to the stairs at the back of the room. Starting up, the fellow threw back his cowl, revealing a fringe of gray hair and a pale, pinched face. He could not be the one the serving man meant. No one with eyes would confuse him with Peril Torval. Rand went back to studying the surface of his wine, his thoughts turning sour. Min and Nynaeve had refused to spend one more hour tramping the streets, as Min had put it, and he suspected Olivia was only going through the motions of showing the drawings. When she did even that. They were all three out of the city for the day in the hills, he judged from what the bond told him of Min. She felt very excited about something. The three of them believed Kismin had fled after failing to kill Rand, and the other renegades had either gone with him or never come at all. They had all been trying to talk him into leaving for days now. At least Lan had not given up.
Why can't the women be right? Luce Theron whispered fiercely in his head. This city is worse than any prison. There is no source here. Why would they stay? Why would any sane man stay? We could ride out beyond the barrier just for a day, a few hours. Light just for a few hours. The voice laughed uncontrollably, wildly. Oh, Light, why do I have a madman in my head? Why? Why?
Angrily, Rand forced Luce Theron to a muted hum, like a bite-me buzzing nearby. He had thought about accompanying the women on their ride, just to feel the source again, though only Min had shown much enthusiasm. Nynaeve and Olivia would not admit why they wanted to ride out when the morning sky had promised the rain that was pouring down outside now. This was not the first time they had gone. To feel the source, he suspected, to drink in the one power again, if only for a short time. Well, he could endure not being able to channel. He could endure the absence of the source. He could. He had to. So he could kill the men who had tried to kill him.
That is not the reason, Luce Theron shouted, forcing past Rand's efforts to shut him up.
You are afraid.
If the sickness takes you while you are trying to use the access, Tirangrial, it could kill you, or worse. It could kill us all, he moaned.
Wine slopped over Rand's wrist, soaking his coat sleeve, and he loosened his grip on the wine cup. The thing had not been in true Rand to begin with, and he did not think he had bent it enough to be noticed. He was not afraid. He refused to let fear touch him. Light, he had to die eventually. He had accepted that.
They tried to kill me, and I want them dead for it, he thought. If it takes a little time, well, maybe the sickness will pass by then.
Burn you, I have to live until the last battle.
In his head, Luz Theron laughed more wildly than before. Another tall man swaggered in, through the door to the stable yard, almost at the foot of the stairs in the back of the room. Shaking rein from his cloak, he tossed back his hood and strode to the doorway of the women's room. With his sneering mouth and sharp nose, and a gaze that swept contemptuously over the people at the tables, he did look something like Torval, but with 20 years more wear on his face and 30 pounds of fat on his frame. Peering through the yellow arch, he called out in a high, prissy voice that was thick with the accents of Ilion.
"Mistress Golger, I do believe in the morning. Early, so I do expect no charges for tomorrow, mind."
Torval was a Terrabonner. Gathering his cloak, Rand left his wine cup on the table and did not look back. The noon sky was gray and cold, and if the rain had slackened, it was not by much, and driven by blustery lake winds, it was enough to have driven almost everyone from the streets. He held the cloak around him one-handed, as much to shelter the drawings in his coat pocket as to keep the rest of him dry, and used the other hand to hold his hood against the gusts. The wind-blown raindrops hit his face like flecks of ice. A lone sedan chair passed him, the bearers' hair hanging sodden down their backs and their boots splashing in puddles on the paving stones. A few people trudged along the streets, wrapped up in their cloaks. There were hours of daylight left, such as it was, but he walked by an inn called the Heart of the Plain without going in, and then by the Three Ladies of Moredo. He told himself it was the rain. This was no weather to be making his way from inn to inn. He knew he was lying, though. A short, stout woman coming down the street, bundled in a dark cloak, suddenly veered toward him. When she stopped in front of him and raised her head, he saw it was Verin.
"So, you are here after all," she said.
Raindrops fell on her upturned face, but she did not seem to notice.
"Your innkeeper thought you intended to walk up to the Avharan, but she was not sure. I'm afraid Mistress Keen doesn't pay much attention to the comings and goings of men. And here I am with my shoes soaked through in my stockings. I used to like walking in the rain when I was a girl, but it seems to have lost its charm somewhere along the way."
"Did Cad Swain send you?" he asked, trying to keep his voice from sounding hopeful.
He had kept his room at the Council's Head after Alana left, so that Cad Swain could find him. He could hardly make her interested if she had to hunt for him inn by inn, especially since she had shown no evidence that she would hunt.
"Oh, no, she would never do that."
Verin sounded surprised at the thought.
"I just thought you might want to hear the news. Cad Swain is out riding with the girls."
She frowned thoughtfully, tilting her head.
"Though I suppose I shouldn't call Olivia a girl. An intriguing woman, much too old to become a novice, unfortunately. Oh, yes, very unfortunate. She drinks in whatever she's taught. I believe she may know almost every way there is to destroy something with the power, but she knows almost nothing else."
He drew her to the side of the street, where the deep overhanging eaves of a single-story stone house gave a little shelter from the rain, if not from the wind to any great extent. Cad Swain was with Min and the others. It might mean nothing. He had seen Aes Sedai fascinated with Nynaeve before, and according to Min, Olivia was even stronger.
"What news, Verin?" he said quietly.
The round little Aes Sedai blinked as though she had forgotten there was any news, then smiled suddenly.
"Oh, yes. The Seán Chan. They are in Ilion. Not the city, not yet. No need to go pale. But they have crossed the border. They are building fortified camps along the coast and inland. I know little of military matters. I always skip over the battles when I read a history. But it does seem to me that whether they are in the city yet or not, that is where they are aiming. Your battles don't seem to have done much to slow them. That's why I don't read about the battles. They seldom seem to alter anything in the long run, only in the short. Are you well?
He forced his eyes open. Varen peered up at him like a chubby sparrow. All that fighting. All those men dead. Men he had killed. And it had changed nothing. Nothing. She is wrong, Luce Theron murmured in his head. Battles can alter history. He did not sound pleased with it. The trouble is, sometimes you cannot say how history will be changed until it is too late.
Varen, if I went to Cad Swain, would she talk with me? About something other than how my manners don't suit her. That's all she ever seems to care about.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid Cad Swain is very much a traditionalist in some ways, Rand. I've never actually heard her call a man uppity, but...
She laid fingertips against her mouth in thought for a moment, then nodded, raindrops sliding down her face.
I believe she will listen to what you have to say, if you can manage to erase the bad impression you made on her, or at least smudge it as much as you can. Few sisters are impressed by titles or crowns, Rand, and Cad Swain less than any other I know. She cares much more about whether or not people are fools. If you can show her you aren't a fool, she will listen.
Then tell her. He drew a deep breath. Light, he wanted to strangle Kismin and Dashiva and all of them with his bare hands. Tell her I'll be leaving Farmadding tomorrow, and I hope she will come with me as my advisor.
Luce Theron sighed with relief at the first part of that. If he had been more than a voice, Rand would have said he stiffened at the second part.
Tell her I accept her terms. I apologize for my behavior in Kyrian, and I will do my best to watch my manners in the future.
Saying that hardly grated at all. Well, a little. But unless Min was wrong, he needed Cad Swain, and Min was never wrong with her viewings.
So you found what you are after here?
He frowned at her, and she smiled back and patted his arm.
If you had come to Farmadding thinking you could conquer the city by announcing who you are, you would have left as soon as you realized you cannot channel here. That leaves wanting to find something, or someone.
Maybe I found what I need, he said curtly. Just not what he wanted.
Then come to the Barsala Palace on the Heights this evening, Rand. Anyone can tell you how to find it. I really am sure she will be willing to listen to you.
Shifting her cloak, she seemed to notice the dampness of the wool for the first time.
Oh, my. I must go dry off. I suggest you do the same.
Half turned to leave, she paused and looked back over her shoulder at him. Her eyes were unblinking. Suddenly, she did not sound muddled at all.
You could do far worse than Cad Swain for an advisor, Rand. But I doubt you could do better. If she accepts, and you truly are not a fool, you will listen to her advice.
She glided away through the rain, looking nothing so much as a very stout swan.
Sometimes that woman frightens me, Luce Theron murmured, and Rand nodded.
Cad Swain did not frighten him, but she made him wary. Any Aes Sedai who had not sworn to him made him wary, except for Nynaeve, and he was not always certain of her either. The rain died away when he was walking the 2 miles back to the council's head, but the wind picked up, and the sign over the door, painted with the stern visage of a woman wearing the jeweled coronet of a first council, swung on creaking hinges. The common room was smaller than that of the Golden Wheel, but the wall panels were carved and polished, the tables beneath the red ceiling beams not so crowded together. The doorway to the women's room was red, too, and carved like intricate lace, as were the lintels of the pale marble fireplaces. At the council's head,
The serving men secured their long hair with polished silver clips. Only two of them were to be seen, standing near the kitchen door, but there were just three men at the tables, foreign merchants, sitting far apart, each engrossed in his own wine. Competitors, perhaps, since now and then one or another would shift on his chair and frown at the other two. One, a graying man, wore a dark gray silk coat, and a lean fellow with a hard face had a red stone the size of a pigeon's egg in his ear. The council's head catered to the wealthier outland merchants, and there were not many of those in Farmadding at present. The clock on a mantle in the women's room, a clock with a silver case, so Min said, rang the hour with small bells as he came into the common room, and before he had finished shaking out his cloak, Lan entered. As soon as the warder met Rand's eye, he shook his head. Well, Rand had not really expected to find them at this point. Even for a Taviren, that might be pushing the impossible. Once they both had steaming cups of wine and were settled on a long red bench in front of one of the fireplaces, he told Lan what he had decided and why. Part of why. The important part. If I had my hands on them right this minute, I'd kill them and take my chances escaping. But killing them changes nothing. It doesn't change enough, anyway, he corrected, frowning into the flames. I can wait one more day hoping to find them tomorrow for weeks, months. Only the world won't wait for me. I thought I'd be done with them by now, but events are already marching ahead of what I expected. Just the events I know about. Like what's happening that I don't know about because I haven't heard some merchant nattering about it over his wine.
You can never know everything, Lan said quietly. And part of what you know is always wrong. Perhaps even the most important part. A portion of wisdom lies in knowing that. A portion of courage lies in going on anyway.
Rand stretched his boots toward the fire. Did Nynaeve tell you she and the others have been keeping company with Cad Swain? They're on a ride with her right now. On the way back from it, rather, he could feel Min drawing closer. She would not be much longer. She was still excited about something, a feeling that surged and fell as if she were trying to hold it down. Lan smiled, a rare event without Nynaeve present. It did not reach his eyes, though.
She forbade me to reveal it to you, but since you already know, she and Min convinced Olivia that if they could catch Cadswain's interest themselves, they might be able to bring her closer to you. They found out where she is staying and asked her to teach them. The smile faded, leaving a face carved from stone. My wife has made a sacrifice for you, sheepherder, he said quietly. I hope you remember that. She will not say much, but I believe Cadswain treats her as if she were still one of the accepted, or maybe a novice. You know how hard that would be for Nynaeve to bear.
Cadswain treats everyone as if they were novices, Rand muttered. Uppity? Light. How was he to deal with the woman? And yet he had to find a way. They sat in silence, staring at the fire, until steam began to rise from their outthrust boot soles. The bond gave him warning, and he looked around just as Nynaeve appeared through the door to the stable yard, and then Min and Olivia, shaking the rain off their cloaks and adjusting their divided skirts and grimacing at damp spots, as if they had expected to go riding in this weather without getting damp. As usual, Nynaeve was wearing her jeweled tirangrial, belt and necklace, bracelets and rings, and the odd bracelet and rings angrial. Still neatening herself, Min looked at Rand and smiled, not at all surprised to see him there, of course. Warmth flowed from her all along the bond, like a caress, though she was still trying to suppress her excitement. The other two women took longer to notice Lan and him, but when they did, they handed their cloaks to one of the serving men to be taken up to their rooms, and joined the two men at the fireplace, holding out their hands to the warmth. "Did you enjoy your ride in the rain with Cad Swain?" Rand asked, raising his cup to take a mouthful of the sweet wine. Min's head jerked toward him, and a flash of guilt stabbed along the bond, but the expression on her face was purest indignation. He almost choked in swallowing. How was her meeting Cad Swain behind his back his fault? "Stop glaring at Lan, Nynaeve," he said, when he could talk. "Varen told me." Nynaeve shifted her dark glower to him, and he shook his head.
He had heard women say that it, whatever it was always a man's fault, but sometimes women really seem to believe it.
"I apologize for whatever you've gone through with her on my behalf," he continued, "but you won't need to any longer. I asked her to be my advisor. Or rather, I asked Varen to tell her I want to ask. Tonight. With any luck, she will leave with us tomorrow."
He expected exclamations of surprised relief, but that was not what he got.
"A remarkable woman, Cad Swain,"
Olivia said, patting her white-threaded golden hair into place. Her husky drawl sounded impressed.
"A strict task mistress. She can teach."
"Sometimes you can see the forest, Woolhead, if you're led to it by the nose," Min said, folding her arms under her breasts.
The bond carried approval, but he did not think it was for deciding to give up on finding the renegades.
"Remember, she wants an apology for Kyrian. Think of her as your aunt, the one who won't put up with any nonsense, and you will do all right with her."
"Cad Swain is not as bad as she seems."
Nynaeve frowned at the other two women, and her hand twitched toward the braid drawn over her shoulder, though all they had done was look at her.
"Well, she isn't. We will work out our differences in time. That's all it will take, a little time."
Rand exchanged glances with Lan, who shrugged slightly, and took another drink. Rand exhaled slowly. Nynaeve had differences with Cad Swain she could work out with time. Min saw a strict aunt in the woman, and Olivia a strict teacher. The first would cause sparks to fly until it was worked out, if he knew Nynaeve, and the last two he did not want. But he was stuck with them. He took another swallow of wine himself. The men at the tables were not near enough to overhear unless she spoke loudly, but Nynaeve lowered her voice and leaned toward Rand.
"Cad Swain showed me what two of my Tirangreal do," she whispered, a glow of excitement in her eyes. "I'll wager those ornaments she wears are Tirangreal too. She recognized mine as soon as she touched them."
Smiling, Nynaeve thumbed one of the three rings on her right hand, the one with a pale green stone.
"I knew this would detect someone channeling Sayadar as much as 3 miles away if I said it. But she says it will detect Sayadine, too. She seemed to think it should tell me what direction they were as well, but we could not see how."
Turning from the fireplace, Olivia sniffed loudly, but she also lowered her voice to say,
"And you were satisfied when she could not. I saw it on your face. How can you be satisfied with not knowing, with ignorance?" "Just with her not knowing everything," Nynaeve muttered, glowering over her shoulder at the taller woman, but an instant later her smile returned. "The most important thing, Rand, is this."
Her hands settled on the slim jeweled belt around her waist.
"She called it a well."
He gave a start as something brushed his face, and she giggled.
"It is a well," she laughed behind fingers pressed over her mouth. "Or a barrel, anyway, and full of Sayadar. Not very much, but all I have to do to refill it is embrace Sayadar through it as if it were an Angreal. Isn't that wonderful?"
"Wonderful," he said, without much enthusiasm. "So Cad Swain was walking around with Tirangreal in her hair, was she? And very likely one of those wells among them, or she would not have recognized it. Light, he thought no one had ever found two Tirangreal that did the same thing. Meeting her tonight would have been bad enough without knowing she would be able to channel even here." He was about to ask Min to come with him when Mistress Keen bustled up, the white bun on top of her head drawn so tight it seemed she was trying to pull the skin off of her face. She cast a suspicious, disapproving look over Rand and Lan, and pursed her lips as if considering what they had done wrong. He had seen her give the same look to the merchants who stayed at the inn. The men, anyway. If the accommodations had not been so comfortable and the food so good, she might not have had any custom.
"This was delivered for your husband this morning, Mistress Farshaw," she said, handing Min a letter sealed with an untidy blob of red wax.
The innkeeper's pointed chin rose.
"And a woman was inquiring after him?"
"Varen,"
Rand said quickly, to forestall questions and get rid of the woman. Who knew to send him a letter here? Cadswain? One of the Ashaman with her? Maybe one of the other sisters? He frowned at the folded square of paper in Min's hand, impatient for the innkeeper to leave. Min's lips twitched, and she avoided looking at him so hard that he knew he caused the smile. Her amusement trickled through the bond.
"Thank you, Mistress Keen. Varen is a friend."
That sharp chin rose higher.
"If you ask me, Mistress Farshaw, when you have a pretty husband, you need to watch your friends, too."
Watching the woman march back to the Red Arch, Min's eyes sparkled with the mirth that flowed along the bond, and her mouth struggled against laughing. Instead of handing the message to Rand, she broke the seal with her thumb and unfolded the letter herself, for all the world as if she were a native of this mad city. She frowned slightly as she read, but a brief flare in the bond was the only warning he had. Crumpling the letter, she turned toward the fireplace. He bounded from the bench to snatch it from her hand just before she could toss it into the flames.
"Don't be a fool," she said, catching his wrist.
She stared up at him, her large dark eyes deadly serious. All that came to him through the bond was a grim intensity.
"Please, don't be a fool."
"I promised Varen I'd try not," he said, but Min did not smile. He smoothed out the page on his chest. The writing was in a spidery hand he did not recognize, and there was no signature. "I know who you are, and I wish you well, but I also wish you gone from Farmatting. The dragon reborn leaves death and destruction where he steps. I now know why you are here, too. You killed Rochaid, and Kismin also is dead. Torval and Gedwin have taken the top floor above a bootmaker named Zeram on Blue Carp Street, just above the Ilion Gate. Kill them and go, and leave Farmadding in peace." The clock in the women's room rang the hour. Hours of daylight remained before he had to meet Cadswain.